Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber, coming to you live from separate locations. We're coming off the first close above 3K since March, and futures indicate more tailwinds for the bulls. Despite jobless claims, 10 weeks in a row now of 2 million plus, Q1 GDP down 5, oil relatively steady as the reopening trade, Jim, really getting reflected today in some of these comments out of retailers like Burlington, ANF, Dollar Tree, and Dollar General.
Yeah, so if you take a look at the Dollar General, the numbers are just extraordinary. I actually have never seen a comp store sales number this good, 21 versus a 7% estimate. Although Dollar Tree is going to be the one, David knows as well, that people look like, you know what, now the Dollar Tree Family Dollar merger, which had been so on the rocks. Well, the judgment is it's working, and that stock could power much higher, Dollar Tree. The opening trade is sapping the money out of tech. I don't know how much longer it can last. That's such a great book in Gary because he knows so much about what people are spending. Remember, they're essential because they have food. And I look at this market and I think, how long with the Dow up 4%? Can we actually say, hey, the reopening trade is just starting? It's already maybe too far, too fast. It's very hard to figure, particularly because FANG is being distorted by the president's tweets, Facebook being lumped in with Twitter. But, David, this Dollar Tree is the tail of the tape here because that shows what people are doing with their stimulus dollars.
They're going and they're spending it on the, on those things, Jim. Do you think it's sustainable? Is it something that when you look at the comps there, you expect will continue?
After listening to the excellent Brian Moynihan interview this morning from Squawk, I think, yeah, I think he got until the unemployment benefits run out. That's going to be the big question. Not this. We have 40 million people. I mean, one in four. I mean, that's a rather, you know, that's the depression, okay? And the NASDAQ is, off a few percent from its high. A total divorce from the reality that's on the street. But as long as the stimulus stays in, as long as bonds like Macy's, they had six times oversubscribed for an 8% bond. As long as the unemployment benefits remain so high, this can continue. Carl, I got to tell you, we've never had such a forceful reaction. It's the exact opposite of the Great Depression. It's the exact opposite of the Great Recession. So it's confounding people. But boy, there's a lot of money out there.
You're not kidding. I think was it Jamie Dimon this week had said FIC might be up 50% year on year. I think we're going to crack a trillion in IG new issuance for the year now. So, Jim, is your playbook, are you going to wait for corporate debt to tell you that it's time for equities to take a breather?
I'm with a barbell trade, which is that you can do a lot of opening trade, but you got to start thinking about, I mean, if you're really going to take recession off the table with 40 million unemployed, I think that shows a lack of foresight. Speaking of lack of foresight, we did have a couple of very big hedge fund managers come on and really talk about the doomsday. And the doomsday playbook hasn't played out. We never retraced back to the March low. One of the things that's really incredible is small cap. How are they doing so well? Small cap represents America, I thought. And I thought America was in tatters. So I think that I'm afraid to go all in on this reopen trade since it's already had a pretty big run. But there's still some catch-ups. I mean, Toll Brothers last night was really good. We haven't had the rails really go far. I don't know how far much further the airlines can go. But if you say that that American cutting 30% means that they're going to actually prosper, then go for it. We are at a really critical juncture because it feels like that there are a lot of people who want to say, you know what, ignore the unemployment number, full speed ahead. And then there are a lot of other people who say, are you kidding me? One out of four people are on the employment line. The July, the numbers go back to what unemployment is. The money runs out. And we're going to be saying, how the heck did we get up this high? Very split market. Two very opposing camps. And it's so vociferous that you think that it's not argumentative. It's actually just at this point dogmatic and very philosophical, meaning that there are a lot of people who feel that I'm going to use a term that I shouldn't, but that the coronavirus was a hoax, meaning that it was just a bad cold. I think those of us who live here feel that that's an atrocious judgment. But there does feel a lot of people who say, you know what? We never should have been closed to begin with. There's so much pent-up demand. Why do we need social distancing will be the next thing that you hear in 10 days.
Right. And then the question will be whether we get a significant recurrence fairly soon or a big second wave in the fall, Jim. Yeah. You've pointed to the pandemic of 1918, of course, or whether we don't, in which case those who question the response may have even more ammunition in terms of supporting their contentions. That said, of course, there is also the fact that we came into this without perhaps enough of a plan in general to sort of try to understand exactly what it was we were dealing with and set out exactly what we were going to try to achieve. It's been kind of always evolving, difficult, of course, given how little we still seem to know about the virus itself. But, Jim, if I could come back to the markets for a moment. You know, you're sort of painting this picture that we've been hearing about lately, which is the economy and the stock market are just not the same thing.
Right.
Now, I, having done this as a financial journalist for 33 years, I mean, I've sort of generally drawn conclusions about the market from the economy or vice versa. Should I no longer be doing that if I'm an investor?
You can't. You can't do it. The big companies are too big. They are when Jerome Powell allowed anyone to raise money, it kept afloat a lot of companies that I think you and I both know would have gone under. We don't need to list them, but they're palpable. And it left small companies to do terribly. Now, you have to think at a certain point, the people who work at the small companies after PPP run, the paycheck protection runs out, or the employment insurance, which is often higher than the PPP runs out, that this all could be a chimerical, that we could be on total quicksand. But, David, if you look at the boarded up stores that we see in many towns, they're the little guy, and you have to think that the little guy, that those people can't go out.
Guy,
but they're,
Jim.
So they're going to Dollar General. They're not going to Macy's.
Right. But you have these conversations. I know you do during the course of the day because I find myself sort of whipsawed. I mean, we look at the markets. We talk about the Fed support. We talk about the success of so many of the big cap companies in terms of this environment. But then you have, during the course of the day, Gary Philbin, by the way, will be joining us, of course, CEO of Dollar Tree, a bit later in the program. But then, Jim, you talk to people through the day are telling you, well, I got layoffs planned. I'm still concerned about what's coming. I still don't know about demand. I'm still going to cut CapEx. I still am worried about my marketing spend. You know, all those things. And then you come in every morning and the S&P's up another 1%.
Well, okay. Look, okay, Carl, to bring it back to mainstream, there is a note today on Royal Caribbean. Okay, so what do we know about the cruise lines? Epicenter of the pandemic. Japan, about half of the people who got sick were from a cruise line. Okay, and I'll mention it's Carnival. I think Carnival's a wonderful company. I think Royal Caribbean is an amazing. Norwegian's my absolute favorite. Now, these companies, they've all been able to raise money. They all have bookings that are well ahead of where they were, where we would expect them in 2021. And I these are not people who ride the cruise ships are made up of people who are working at the small and medium sized business. So I think that the great quandary we feel is who's booking and how is it possible? And how about we take Brian Moynihan's notion of maybe we're just a richer country or that we have many more people who are doing well or were doing well and actually saved. And I think it's the saving quotient that we don't think of. People think of America as reckless spenders. Obviously, everyone seems to have learned something from 2008, 2009. The Fed learned. People learned to save. They are spendthrifts when we want them to be spendthrifts. The kids are living on the mattress at home. Now they're starting to think about $80,000 college, whether that's worth it. We are a country that reminds me of what happened after the Great Depression with our parents or grandparents, where every penny was saved. We're not putting enough credence in what was in the bank account of people before this and how it's lasting for them. Plus, remember, no one's spending on anything because there was no place to go.
The Treasury spending and the Fed spending, they're spending, Jim. $24 trillion national debt on our way to who knows where. And balance sheet of the Fed is going to be, $8 trillion at the end of the year?
What are you going to do?
That's where the spending's coming from.
But when you go back to the Great Depression, we study Great Depression in school. And what do we learn? The Fed tightened in 37. And that's why the only reason the Depression ended was because of World War II. We look back and we think, how stupid could they have been? Well, now, I mean, I can't say how stupid they've been. This is what I've been railing against 1937 forever. I mean, you got to go take that course where the Fed said, hey, we're safe. Well, I mean, I think that Jerome Powell, when this is over, he's not going to be known as the guy who created Weimar Republic and wheelbarrow dollars. I think he's going to be the guy who saved us from a level of deflation that would have been very much like what happened in Germany in another era that you don't want to talk about.
Right.
Yeah. Even amid more discussion today, guys, that the Fed is having actually to not spend. The amount of money they've actually spent is maybe lower than you might have expected. The jawboning was just incredibly effective. The other big story today, guys, we're going to wait for this executive order to come out of the White House. We've gotten reports about a draft, but obviously targeting social media companies, trying to prod regulators to rethink the law that protects them from being sued or being held liable for their content. Sorkin did talk to Mark Zuckerberg about that, about small business and a lot of other things. Some of that ran this morning on Squawk.
Our policies are grounded in trying to give people as much voice as possible while saying, if you're going to harm people in specific ways, right, if you're going to do something that's going to cause violence, or if you're saying that something is a cure to a disease that has been proven to be a cure, but it's not, and that could lead people to either not seek another treatment or do something that could be harmful, we'll take that down no matter who says that. You know, we had a case recently where the Brazilian president was saying that that hydroxychloroquine was proven by scientists to be safe. And we had to make the difficult decision of taking that down, even though we want to provide as much voice as possible. So there are lines and we will enforce them. But I think in general, you want to give as wide of a voice as possible. And I think you want to have a special deference to political speech.
Jack Dorsey last night tweeting, fact check, there is someone ultimately accountable for our actions as a company, and that's me. Please leave our employees out of this. We'll continue to point out incorrect or disputed information about elections globally. And he goes on to say, it doesn't make us an arbiter of truth. Our intention is to connect the dots of conflicting statements and show the information in dispute so people can judge for themselves. Jim, how much pressure do these stocks deserve to be under today?
Not that much, I think, because remember, they're still based on earnings. And I think that what will happen is that even if this Section 230 is that's what the exception they have, they can basically be like considered as common carriers. Even if it's discussed, it won't be taken away, I don't think. It is interesting, the example that Mark Zuckerberg did. I'm not sure whether it was intentional or not, but he said that they had to take down that the Brazilian president said the hydroxy was safe. We have a president who doesn't say it's safe. We have a president who says it should be used. Well, kind of ironic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
But I do think that, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, that's, listen, he also discussed, Jim, during the interview with Andrew, voter suppression, and if they see things that would lead to potential sending people to the polls at the wrong day or the wrong time, they would take that down as well. But, Jim, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read the order, and we should remind people Section 230 was designed to address court decisions really in the earliest days of the Internet, so that if you engage in any editing of content or restricting the content, then you potentially were considered a publisher and therefore open to liability.
Right.
And things like defamation and libel for torts. But my question is, in reading this, what is going to then, they had an out, and they were protected from civil liability when it was acting in good faith to restrict access to content that was considered obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable. So that's you're exempted there.
Right.
So where is the line drawn now, you know, when people say, OK, you've got to allow free speech, you've got to do things that are, you know, that are that allow free speech, and a publisher or speaker is allowed to engage in whatever they want to say, and you can't edit it. I guess my question is, where's the line drawn here? Well, what constitutes what we just what I just said and what doesn't?
Well, I always think that Mark Benioff, who's on Mad Money tonight, the CEO of Salesforce, often talks about the notion. Well, look, let's say the New York Times were to take the just print things that were untrue. It would also have a counter saying it was untrue. And I think that I totally understand, by the way, the president's view is not outrageous in the sense that you don't want anyone to contradict you if you're not lying. And you could argue that some of this stuff is bias. I'm not going to totally diss the president's position, but I think it's a dead end because in the end, you know, this is not a presidential. There's this First Amendment. There's Commerce Clause. There's a lot of people in Congress, justice, and the Supreme Court are all going to get involved in this thing in the end. Justice, obviously, already. And so an executive order is the beginning, not the end.
Right. Even as we speak, guys, Bolsonaro is on the tape saying that his opponents are trying to oust him in Brazil by silencing social media that backs him. Clearly a global story. Yes. A lot more to get to this morning. We'll talk about Boeing resuming production of the MAX, some of the guidance we're getting on employment out of the airlines. Obviously, a ton of retail from Burlington to A&F to Dollar Tree and Dollar General. We're back in a minute. China's legislature has approved a proposal to impose a new national security law on Hong Kong. Question is, what happens now? Our Eunice Yun is in Beijing today. Hi, Eunice.
Hey, Carl. Well, China's premier defended the decision, saying that the national security laws protect the long-term prosperity of the city. This comes after the what people often describe as a rubber stamp parliament overwhelmingly approved the legislation, 2,878 in favor and only one against. Now, this vote allows Beijing to tighten its controls over the territory, which generally up till now has been running its own affairs separate from mainland China. Now, top officials will be able to work out the details of this legislation, including what exactly is defined as an activity that would be considered subversive to the Chinese state and when and how they plan to open up intelligence agencies within the city. Now, as you could imagine, there are many people in Hong Kong who are worried about the implications this means for their freedoms. Many of them are now looking to the U.S. for a response. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had said that he believed and that the U.S. believed that Hong Kong is no longer autonomous from mainland China. And that President Trump had promised earlier this week that something would be done about it by the United States. So a lot of people watching that, a lot of speculation about what that's going to be, whether or not that meant visa restrictions for Chinese officials, a freeze on transactions, or possibly the U.S. pulling its long-term relationship and trading and preferential trading status with Hong Kong. So that has been raising a lot of concerns in Hong Kong among business people there who I speak to. Some of them say that their manufacturing and shipments out of Hong Kong could face higher tariffs. And generally, they're worried about the business climate. In fact, the American Chamber of Commerce had said that these tensions are now at a whole new level. Guys?
Eunice, we're going to wait to see how the U.S. does respond. The president did promise there would be a response of some kind. Eunice, thanks. Our Eunice Yun in Beijing today. Take a quick break here. As we said, futures looking pretty green as nearly all of the names on the S&P 500 are trading above their 50-day moving average. Back in a moment. The data this morning, not so good. Jobless claims another 2 million. GDP down 5, one of the worst numbers on record. Durables down 17. But as we've seen, that tends not to get in the market's way. Look, Dow looks to open up 240 in just a few moments.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street as we get you ready for an opening bell on this Thursday, about 4 minutes from now. Let's squeeze in a Mad Dash. I know last night Anil Bhusri, the CEO of Workday Gym, was one of your guests on Mad Money, and it's a feature for you on the Mad Dash.
Right, and I know that you know Anil, you know what a solid shooter is, and he delivered a number that was not as bad as feared, and an outlook that I regard as being, even though the headline said it was not good, to really be spectacular, because there are a lot of deals that got pushed out, but will be done this quarter. He landed that are very big deal, Fannie Mae. He also has announced two market-moving partnerships, one with Salesforce on the reawakening trade, so to speak, because Salesforce has this thing called Work.com. It's really worth looking at. And then Microsoft, be able to make it so you don't have to toggle back and forth between Microsoft and Workday. The reason I mention all this is because this is the stock to watch if the money is going to ever flow back to tech. Otherwise, you know what, David, it's just the recovery trade again, which is the one that confounds most Americans, because how do you recover when you have GDP down 5%? And the answer is the things that we were talking about, which is liquidity, which is the fact that a lot of companies made it that we would have said couldn't have made it, including, again, let's take a look at Macy's, look at Kohl's. It's incredible how they were able to raise money. And thank you, Jay Powell, because it was you who did it, not the shoppers at Macy's or Kohl's.
Right. As Carl pointed out, the jawboning alone was certainly enough, or the idea of Fed support being there seemed to be enough to support these investment grade markets, or even non-investment grade to a certain extent. And let's not forget the fallen angels is where the Fed also said it would come in potentially and help support the market. Those
Everybody
that were investment
hurts,
grade
huh?
that then fell below. Everybody but Hertz. I'm so glad you brought that up, because we have had our share of bankruptcies. And let's not, of course, forget that it was through no fault of execution on the part of these companies. Hertz had a large debt load. It was backed up by that enormous fleet of cars, the value of which conceivably was going down, or their inability to potentially monetize those to actually pay down debt in an effective way, Jim. But the losses there are significant, not the least of which, of course, was for Carl Icahn, who at one point owned as much as 38% of the company, had agitated years ago, had people on the board of directors, of course. And sold stock at 72 cents yesterday.
Oh, boy.
50 plus million shares, I believe.
And we've got, well, it's incredible. He's got some winners, too. He's had a lot of winners. We have to go to Phil LeBeau on this, because there's 700,000 cars that theoretically could hit the market. That's an actual used car market mover. The used car market has been horrendous. We often forget, as we buy the autos and all the auto equivalents as part of the recovery trade, that the autos have not snapped back. There really isn't anything there other than, maybe Magna, because they save money as a parts company. So the auto part of the trade has been not great, as we know from NXP yesterday, during that interview that you brought to us, where they have too much auto. So we have to watch it here. Watch this Workday. It's going to be the tail of the tape, even more than Micron, which yesterday pre-announced a much better than expected quarter.
All right, guys, there's the opening bell at the NYC live shot of Times Square. Jim, I know, speaking of cloud names, you got Salesforce tonight. JP Morgan this week did do their own channel checks looking at some of CRM's partners. They weren't all that optimistic.
No. I'm betting that Mark Benioff, he has a particular plan for companies who want to reopen and reopen in a correct way. And I think if he directs, if we see numbers for that are good, that's going to win over a lot of new customers that he did not have before. A lot of people still feasting on Oracle. There was a subtext from Anil Bushri about feasting from Oracle. I think that the cloud, the people going to the cloud, companies going to the cloud, it's still early. I know it seemed like everyone's on the cloud. I don't want to bet against Mark. This initiative, this Work.com initiative, is quite impressive. It's the best way to try to figure out what to do for your employees. It's almost as if the government should have just figured out what Mark did. Or maybe Mark is the government in this case, because it's been so unruly. No criticism of the government. I mean, look, it's hard. I mean, look, you have Dr. Fauci, a foremost guy. And I don't want to spend too much time on science here. But he said, listen, don't wear masks. And now he says, wear a mask. He came out and said, look, there's going to be the fall. It's definitely going to be bad. He comes out and says, now the fall may not be bad. He has been offering some ill-advised information. And I say that from someone who reveres him.
The CDC, too, Jim. The CDC in particular, from the very onset of this crisis, has been very hard to follow.
Very.
Again, and the mask thing, what I recall, came from them specifically. Don't worry about wearing masks. Save them for the front line, the people on the front lines. And then, of course, that changed. And we look at Asia, where wearing masks had been something that was done in daily life quite frequently. Right. And the rates there are so far lower than we have in this country.
Yeah, look, they'd do much better if they just watch Dr. Gottlieb in the morning and say, hey, here's what we're going to do today. They should follow him on Twitter. They can say, here's what the plan is. Gottlieb's been so much better than these, Jimmy Chill will say, from these ill-advised people. And CDC at one time was a great organization and was considered to be the best in the world. And I think when the book is written, they will come under particular criticism for this, for what's happened here. They gave us terrible guidance.
Yeah. Jim, this is one day where the financials are not leading here. We did get a lot of information from the banks today. American Express at Bernstein yesterday talking about spending improving, but still down in the mid-30s. Travel, entertainment still down 90. And then Brian Moynihan of B of A on Squawk this morning talking about loan deferrals. Here's what he said.
You've seen the deferrals in our customers' accounts fall dramatically, deferral requests. So we had probably 1 million in the first couple of weeks, first 3 weeks. And then, you know, we've had in the next five, 4 or 5, 6 weeks after that, you've had a total of 500,000. So it's really dropped. And in the last couple of weeks, it's been in mortgage, for example, you know, very small. And so why is that happening? I think people have adjusted, asked for deferrals. They were shocked by what happened. Once they got that deferral, as in the mortgage area, 20-odd percent of the people who asked for deferral went ahead and made their payments, which meant they were in a different condition when payment time came than they thought they'd be when they asked for deferral.
Well,
he added, Jim, that apparel spending up 50 month on month as people are now obviously starting to broaden their spending patterns.
But they're buying the apparel. Well, Burlington didn't have that great a number because Burlington was closed by the government, viewed as non-essential. When you guys interviewed Dollar Tree, I really am curious what Philbin says about apparel. They had a very bad apparel lineup during the fall of last year and winter. But if they say that people are buying apparel there, and TJX, another one to watch, that is, stock is going down. Well, that's stupid as a bag of hammers. That company's going to have a pretty interesting situation today. By the way, the recession trade is on. You know, maybe someone's looking at this one out of four people that and comparing it to, say, 1931. I'm busy trying to reconcile. But of course, obviously, what we had now is a safety net. In 1931, the banks all go. 1932, banking holiday. 1933, we figure out that we need a bunch of programs to put people to work versus unemployment insurance and J. Powell printing money. So, but today is a day where we're seeing the new cores and the caterpillars battle the Procter and Gambles. And I've got to tell you, my money's on the Proctors.
But, you know, Jim, if a week ago or 8 trading days ago, I'd said, all right, go long Wells Fargo and short Peloton. I'm not sure you would have done that, but that would have
been the most stupid thing in the world. And also correct.
Right, but. Yeah, and also
Charlie
correct.
Sharp. I mean, Wells Fargo,
we were watching that stock. It had a 9% plus 9%+ yield a couple of weeks ago. Now it's down to 7.2%, of course, given the move up in the price.
Now Charlie's
that we're
up on the buy.
Wells, and the overall rebound of the banks.
Well, look, Jamie Dimon came out and said V is for victory. I mean, he didn't say it's going to be a W. He didn't say it's going to be a U. He didn't say it's going to be a swoosh. He didn't even say it was going to be an Amazon. He said it was going to be a V. And when you have a V, you got to sell Peloton and you got to buy Royal Norwegian Carnival, which, by the way, there ain't no stopping those stocks now. But isn't it getting tired? Aren't the airlines getting tired when American has to lay off 30% of the people, even though they're kind of not really supposed to be laying off anybody because they took the Fed money? But I know they're doing buyouts. And what is that about?
Yeah, layoffs at American and more significant layoffs at Boeing as well, beyond the 2,500 voluntary.
Bye.
Yesterday we heard about in the morning, a lot more behind that as well at Boeing. I mean, the numbers are, you know, are getting to be fairly large, at least in these industries, Carl, that have been so hard hit, of course, travel and leisure being the key ones.
Oh, my God, travel and leisure. And yet, you know, you hear Moynihan say they're really not that spending, that spending that much. I find that what's most daunting is that they're half of everything. I mean, I have a friend right now who's doing a cruise, the Grand Canyon. And everything's half, meaning not half off, but Marriott's only allowed to be, like, say, half full. I mean, everything's in half. How do you make as much money when you can only have half your customers? I mean, it's the government by fiat telling you you're going to make 50% less. And, of course, the way leverage works, your expenses don't go down. but your the amount of money you take in, revenues, goes down big. And this is the problem I have with trying to understand how this market's going to resolve itself, because unless you have a Dollar Tree, Dollar General, your revenues are going down big and your expenses are staying the same. And that's not a recipe for good numbers. But right now, good numbers don't matter that much. They somehow don't matter.
UN's got a report on international tourism, guys, which they say will drop 70% this year. It's the biggest drop since they started taking records back in the 1950s, which sort of leads you, Jim, to domestic travel, right? I mean, I'm sure you've seen the Google search trends. Searches for Yosemite and national parks are through the roof. And now we got MGM and Wynn sort of laying out their Vegas plans.
But if you read the Wynn plan, by the way, read the Wynn plan. It's extraordinary. And they bring in the Johns Hopkins guys. I was questioning, I was very worried about airflow, because as a restaurant owner, there was a very bad CDC piece put out about how if you have the airflow done the wrong way, patient one gives it to patient four. But Matt Maddox brings in Johns Hopkins, comes up with a terrific plan to save Wynn and make you feel like you could go to Wynn and do some gambling and be safe. And I think it'll work. But remember, again, you need crowds. A lot of businesses need crowds. And I think that when you look at what the good thing that Dr. Fauci's been talking about over and over again is social distancing, and that means no crowds. So I don't know how you have no crowds with businesses that need crowds. I haven't been able to figure it out yet.
Jim, one of the strongest performers this morning is the pharmaceutical sector. Of course,
recession.
We talked earlier this week about Merck. When they, you know, made some moves in terms of vaccines and therapeutics. But Merck, Pfizer, J&J, Lilly, of course, which has just been an incredibly strong performer, up over 12% this year, is also up yet again. Not sure why the move is being made, but that is certainly one of the strongest areas of the market right now.
That's the recession trade coming back, David. I mean, look, it's not the vaccine trade. Because Lilly is mostly diabetes and immuno, and it's not the testing phase. It's really, you know, how's Moderna doing? Anybody selling there today? It was a good opportunity, see, because it's, Moderna's up 4. Get your broker on the phone,
yeah,
do a little
up.
Selling there. I'm talking about the executives, not the owners. I'm still reeling from that chief, the selling there. I've never seen anything like it. And I know it may have been planned. But you know what? You can plan something that's not right. And they have a lot to answer for it. I'm going to stay on that story until I actually see someone answer it. I mean, it's just not something that should have happened. It just shouldn't have happened.
Right.
It wasn't right.
Not to say that there isn't a chance that the vaccine will prove effective. I mean, I know it was 8 people. We're waiting, obviously, for a far larger sample size, Jim. But you know, there are those who do believe the mRNA, the technology itself, will prove effective, that you will have a vaccine in some fashion that is at least quite helpful.
Well, you don't come on and be really enthusiastic and do a huge media blitz. You speak softly, like a J&J that's doing incredible stuff. Yep. When you talk to J&J about it, you know, they're like, just say, listen, you got to speak to this Harvard professor, really understand. And then you speak to the Harvard professor and he lectures you about how dumb you are. And that's OK. I can handle that. I was told that at Harvard myself, so I got a little extra dose. But I do feel that the stocks that are going up in the drug group are the ones that just say, listen, we're going to have a recession. Enough with the reopening trade, because in the end, it's too far too fast. And I think it is too far too fast. By the way, Pfizer is quietly in the lead, I understand, with the vaccine. And Glaxo offering some good stuff.
Themis, which we heard about earlier in the week with Merck guys, the CEO this morning said a couple things. One, no geographic preferential treatment in terms of vaccine distribution. Clinical trials would begin soon in France and Belgium and then move on to the U.S. But Merck's up 2%. Jim, I want to turn you quickly to housing because Toll did report. And you ask whether it's a counter-urban trade, because we thought about Toll in many ways in the last few years as an urban trade.
Right, I know, because Toll did all these fantastic projects. We see them in New York. They ring New York City, and of course they're in Brooklyn and Hoboken. I'll tell you, Toll was up $2. Now the call's going on. It was up $2 last night, and all in one figure. And the figure was up 13% in May. And that's really rather extraordinary. People feel that the rates are working, low rates, but this counter-urban trade is really fear of virus. And as long as there's fear of virus, there will be people who say, you know what, I'm done with urban. I don't know how long that lasts. For about as long as people don't fly. I mean, I think that what does matter is that the rates are so low, people feel if this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity because a lot of housing is depressed. There's some real buys out there. And also, on Doug Yearley, who's a fantastic CEO, he does point out there's not a lot of inventory, but what is there of inventory is actually down a little bit. I don't know. I think that housing, the main number is extraordinary. I didn't expect it to be up that big. A lot of people shopping for houses. Pent-up demand is what we keep hearing.
No kidding. What, mortgage apps up 6 straight weeks?
Incredible.
I mean, we talk about high-frequency data, V-shapes in high-frequency data, but, I mean, everyone points to mortgage apps, purchase apps, more than anything else right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's strong in keeping with what Brian Moynihan said, in keeping with the rally in Wells, which is mortgage-centric. Oh, Wells taking a little bit of a breather here. Still yield 7.4, David. But I do think that housing is surprising. Spending is surprising. Balance sheet is surprising. The ability of companies to be able to raise capital when they shouldn't be is surprising. The big omni-channel move is surprising. And that's what's made it so that the hedge funds who've made these horrendous bets against this market just have to be reeling. They just have to be reeling. They just got the wrong side of the trade.
Well, a lot of them, Jim, took risk off, but I don't know that a lot of them were actually short.
You know,
a handful were, certainly. We've heard from some people who are quite negative around the very bottom of the market. But, I think what you may see more is underperformance as opposed to actual significant declines.
That seems reasonable. I just keep going back to the reverberation of the hedge funds that came on. I don't even know if it's fair that Stan Druckenmiller was painted with that brush because I wasn't at the economic club. Ray Dalio is so smart that you almost have to take your – if you don't pay attention to Ray Dalio, I think you're pretty foolish. Book pretty good, too. The rich people who came on were very scared. How about that for the correct generalization?
Yeah, but they may still be, and they may have reason to be. I mean, all right, so we've had this incredible move from the bottom. We've talked about it. We've talked about the divergence between the real economy and the stock market and so many other things. Here it is. The S&P, Jim, is 3,042.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's a number that I think many people might not have anticipated we would see again for quite some time, even 6 weeks ago. But is this a number indicative of where the market is that you tell people come in now, the water's safe?
Well, you just had a vicious rotation. You could come into workday as of now, still even up to 12 because the stock is down 50 points from its high. And in Neil Bush, we basically laid out a long-term course. But let's talk about Disney for a second. And I don't want to talk about the actual firm that downgraded because that's kind of insignificant. But if you look at Disney, and Carl, this is something I really need your help on. Let's say you're opening a slow opening of parts of Disney. That has taken the stock from 90 to 120. Now, is that a slow opening where we have no take your temperature? That's the biggest ruse of all, right? Taking temperature, what does that mean? The people who give you the disease are the people who have no temperature, but they take temperature. You need blood test.
I'm laughing because Jim's referring to a downgrade out of Imperial today. We don't talk about them very much, but they go to underweight. And Jim, they say it's up 20% in a few weeks because of Disney Springs, which we admittedly can say is immaterial to the income statement. Their argument is that you want to trade it, not own it, which I think goes counter
like
to your more secular views.
No, I mean, look, Disney's going to be open someday. Look, let's not forget, a lot of stocks are going up because they survived. And if the virus it didn't come back, and remember, a lot of states open, there were a lot of naysayers, then, survival, we get to a bridge with the unemployment, and then the economy really does open, and some of these companies are deserving of where they're selling. So, I mean, I get that. I get that. I think it makes sense. And now that Dr. Fauci, who, again, I mean, he is still the expert. Dr. Fauci said it may not be bad this fall, well, let's just get to the fall and a lot of people can do okay.
Yeah. Let's hope we don't become Brazil, which is increasingly a topic of discussion, too. Let's check in with Rick Santelli, who brought us all the data this morning. Not much of it good. Hey, Rick.
Well, not much of it was good, but the market thinks otherwise. Look at an intraday of tens. After the data hit, yields moved up a bit. You know, is the asset class and the fixed income sovereign the safest? That's where all the nervous people go, and we should be nervous, but we should be less nervous because they seem to be leaving. Look at a chart mid-March of 30-year bonds. They look to be closing at a 10-week high today. I think a lot of the people globally that were buying some of these sovereigns have moved into the equity markets because it's an unloved space, but you still can cash a check if it's been long since mid-March. And if you look at 10-year in particular on the French side, this is really revealing. Look at the 10-year OAT. Now, this is a month-to-date chart. There's been two sessions all of May so far that have closed above zero. And by above zero, one was 0.004 and one was 0.002. We want to watch because they're going to be throwing $2 trillion into the system. My guess is, much like many global markets, the equity markets are going to take off and rates are going to start to move up a bit. Hint, hint, they cash your checks even if it doesn't make economic sense. And finally, the euro versus the dollar now closing at a two-month high, which means the dollar index is closing at a two-month low. Carl, Jim, David. Back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see you in a little bit. So S&P 3039 is off the initial bounce, but we are still hanging in above the 200-day moving average, which at this stage is about 3,001. We're back in a moment. Apple is upping the ante on movies. The Journal this morning reports that the company has nabbed Martin Scorsese's next film, Killers of the Flower Moon, starring Leo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro. Apple, of course, beating out Netflix, which produced his last film, The Irishman. Jim, we're back to intellectual property in the movie business and some of these bidding wars.
It's so funny. Apple likes to start slow. They want to be sure they get it right. That's not unusual for them. And now we see them coming on with the Tom Hanks movie with this. They're going to be a major force. They're going to be major in podcasts. They're going to be major in movies. They have the more firepower than anybody. Obviously, they're making this as part of that service revenue stream that they realize has such great gross margins. This is very important, and I'm glad we're talking about it because this must have been a jump ball, Carl. And the jump ball went to the guy who had the most money. And that's a big, big change because someone was playing with borrowed money. The other guy's playing with cash.
That's a good point.
It reminds David. It reminds me, Carl, of my interview with John Malone last November, I guess. We sat down for our annual interview. And he talked about, remember, Jim, he talked about optionality when he talked about Apple and their efforts here. He said, you know, they're sort of testing the waters. They're going to see, they're going to be deliberate, but they are going to make moves based on what they see in terms of consumer response. And clearly they are starting to spend more money. Right. We've seen that in terms of also filling out their library a bit, bidding here. And then this will, of course, once again raise that that question that everybody loves to ask. Will they actually look to make an acquisition of some kind in this area?
Seminal interview.
I still say that likelihood seems small, but it is interesting to note what Apple's doing here.
Yeah. We'll watch the Dow here, guys. Boeing is in the lead along with a few of the pharma names, Merck, Pfizer, J&J, UNH as well, and Procter. So a mix of defense and Boeing stuck right in there. Back in a moment. S&P is being led this morning by Dollar Tree, up almost 19% for the week to date. We're going to talk to Gary Philbin later on this morning about their comp number of 7. We were looking for only 4.4 when Squawk on the Street continues in a few moments. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
Been waiting for this William Blair upgrades deer today. Why? Well, of course, it's an election year. That's when the farmers do best. I had Corteva earlier this week. That's the largest seed company. They don't do as well. You buy equipment, you get the check from the government. You buy equipment, you vote for the incumbent. So there you go. Buy deer.
Yeah, I thought the interesting call. Bloomberg did have a piece, Jim, that China's buying some soy from the Brazilians. Who knows, right? But their commitment is to buy more from us.
Yeah. I'm calling that relationship suboptimal.
What's on Mad tonight?
Okay, I got Zebra, which has when you go into a test center, you know, in the drive-through test center, that's Zebra technology. PayPal, Dan Shulman, hero to many, incredible. He's passed all the banks. And then Benioff, a lot to talk about with him. He's going to report earnings. You got Work.com. You're right about the, you know, channel checks. Are people worried? And, of course, maybe we throw in a question about Twitter and Facebook. Why not?
Yeah. And media, of course. Time, yep. And all the rest, Jim. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.